Production support for Earth Eats comes from Bill Brown at Griffey Creek Studio, architectural design and consulting for residential, commercial, and community projects. Sustainable, energy-positive, and resilient design for a rapidly changing world. Bill at GriffeyCreek.studio. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. From WFIU in Bloomington, Indiana, this is Earth Eats. I'm your host, Kate Young.
The thing with gardens to me, it's not just that, it's not just food. You know, to me, it equals freedom.
On the show this week, it's Ron Finley in a conversation about the magic of growing your own food, even if it's just a small strip of land by the side of the road in a rundown part of town. Harvest Public Media has a story on the challenges for farmers using sustainable growing practices, and Chef D has an easy recipe featuring the delicate flavors of squash blossoms. Just ahead in the next half hour, here on Earth Eats. Alex Chambers is back with the news. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Kate. The White House unveiled an immigration reform proposal last week that would favor highly trained workers over those with family members in the U.S. But the plan didn't address a shortage of farm workers that has hamstrung the agriculture industry. The American Farm Bureau said the proposal doesn't address farmers' struggle to find enough workers for peak seasons. In a press release, Farm Bureau President Zippy Duval said any immigration reform plan has to include the farm labor shortage. The Agriculture Workforce Coalition, a farm worker advocacy group, has proposed one solution, a plan to allow workers already in the country to gain legal status. And in California, legislators have proposed what they call a blue card plan. That would protect undocumented farm workers from deportation and create a path to legal permanent resident status. Millions of Americans who receive SNAP benefits could soon order their groceries online. Under a USDA pilot program, SNAP participants in New York State can use their benefits to purchase food items from Amazon, Walmart, and ShopRite. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue said the goal of the program is to give SNAP recipients the chance to shop for food the way more and more Americans are already doing it, online. But some researchers are skeptical about the program's promises. Nevin Cohen, research director at the CUNY Urban Food Policy Institute, says an online SNAP program could be bad for Americans' health. Ordering groceries online encourages people to buy more processed foods rather than perishable items like fruits and vegetables. And while shopping from home can help the elderly and people with mobility issues, it also gives people less chance for social interaction and could increase feelings of isolation. Shopping online affects local economies, too. Online SNAP purchases will direct that money to places other than local grocery stores, which makes it harder to access local food. If the online SNAP pilot is successful over the next 2 years, the USDA plans to expand the online program to the nearly 40 million SNAP recipients nationwide. A fund created to pay off school lunch debt is running out of money. The Food Assistance Fund was created to help Bloomington, Indiana's Monroe County Community School Corporation cover the cost of lunches when families fall short. Schools across the country are struggling with lunch debt, with some even barring high school students from homecoming or denying their diplomas until their debt is paid. Monroe County's Food Assistance Fund was started in May 2017 in response to the district's practice of replacing hot meals with cold sack lunches for students with outstanding debt. Community members called the practice lunch shaming, saying students were being publicly humiliated for their families' unpaid bills. After the public outcry, the school corporation dropped that practice. All students receive the same meals now, even if they have outstanding debt. But the school corporation is still short on money. Because federal funds cannot be used to cover lunch debt, the corporation may have to draw from its operations fund to cover the $49,000 shortfall. The School Lunch Assistance Fund, collected by the Foundation for Monroe County Community Schools, can receive donations for this year's debt until June 30th, 2019. Thanks to Chad Bouchard and Taylor Killow for those stories.
And thanks to you, Alex Chambers.
Always a pleasure, Kate.
Agriculture accounts for about 9% of greenhouse gases in the U.S., meaning it's a major contributor to climate change. But while some research suggests vegetarian diets are key, Harvest Public Media's Madeline Beck found that one solution lies not just with consumers, but with farmers.
Dave Bishop drove around his 350-acre farm on a gator, or something that looks like a four-wheeler with a truck bed. He passed by Oreo cows and rows of veggies before settling in a quiet space down by Kickapoo Creek with his big white dog, Molly, trailing behind.
What are you doing, Molly? You can check up on?
Bishop's largely organic operation is Prairie Earth Farm in central Illinois. There, he uses regenerative agriculture, or sustainable practices like cover crops in the off-season, to keep more carbon in the ground and reduce the need for fertilizers, which release greenhouse gases. Bishop looks out over the field where he rotates soybeans, corn, and other grains, and cows.
And ultimately, whether we eat the cow or not, the cow is going to make the kind of contributions that we need to grow the healthy plants that you want to eat, and to do so without having to resort to using chemical fertilizers.
But cows' guts produce a lot of methane, a greenhouse gas that doesn't last as long in the atmosphere as carbon dioxide, but is about 30 times more potent. It's considered the second leading greenhouse gas to cause climate change, and agriculture is its number one source in the U.S.
As an individual, one of the biggest effects that we can have is changing what we're eating to eating a smaller amount of beef.
That's Paul West with the University of Minnesota. He's working on how to balance feeding a growing world population with reducing emissions so climate change can be slowed. But it's not just about what we eat. West describes an optimal agriculture operation that sounds an awful lot like Bishop's, one that cycles nutrients.
Going back to how a lot of farms in the Midwest were managed, largely up until the 1980s, where we generally had smaller farms, but also more of a mixture of row crops and hay and dairy and cattle.
West says farms that grow thousands of acres of corn need lots of nitrogen fertilizer, which eventually gives off another greenhouse gas, nitrous oxide. It's about 300 times more potent than carbon dioxide, even if it doesn't last as long. But regenerative agriculture mixes in crops that help replenish the soil, meaning farms don't need as much fertilizer. And some fertilizer they need can come from cows munching in the fields. Bishop says that's good for his bottom line and mirrors nature.
There are plants and animals present in all ecosystems, and they're there for a reason, because that's what it takes to make that ecosystem work. Well, farm is no different. It's an ecosystem.
However, most farming operations aren't like Bishop's. Instead, they're raising many more cows without the plants. So researchers are trying to cut down on emissions cows produce overall, using seaweed supplements and breeding cows that produce less methane. But the animal's gut microbes that produce methane help the animal. Cut out too many, and that could be toxic. And when it comes down to it, not everyone will give up burgers. But that doesn't mean people should give up on lowering emissions, according to Keith Poschen, a professor at Colorado State University. He thinks regenerative agriculture is great.
But it's not the only solution. It's not that just by our, our best management practices on agricultural lands, we solve global warming. No, that's not going to happen. But we can make a contribution towards it.
Bishop at Prairie Earth Farms said vilifying cows won't help. Researchers need to listen to farmers, and farmers need to listen to researchers, because everyone is just trying to make sure we can grow enough food.
So we've got to get this right.
Madeline Beck, Harvest Public Media.
This story is part of a collaboration with 14 news outlets led by Inside Climate News. Harvest Public Media is a reporting collective in the Midwest. Find more at harvestpublicmedia.org. This time of year, and throughout the growing season, we make a lot of frittatas at my house. It's such an easy way to turn fresh summer vegetables into a complete meal. Not familiar with frittatas? No worries. Annie Corrigan and Chef Daniel Orr will fill you in. They start out in the garden, where Chef D is picking squash blossoms.
So I've got all these crazy squash plants growing, and these you have to pick every day. They will keep several days in the refrigerator, but if you left them on the plant, they would wilt by the end of the day. So if you just have a couple plants and you don't have enough for a whole meal, you can pick them every day for a few days and then you'll have enough for the weekend. All right, so we can head in and cook up some breakfast. And a frittata is basically the easiest omelet you can make because you don't have to worry about flipping it or turning it over. You serve it right in the pan. What we've done is we've already parboiled some little fingerling potatoes. So we're going to get those started in the pan. You can just grab me the olive oil there.
Absolutely.
We're going to let those get started. I'll crack some eggs. And this is going to be a frittata that will serve, you know, 4 or 5 people. We're going to use 8 eggs. We'll just give those a little whisk. So this is a great dish to do on the weekends when you have some friends over for brunch. You can just crack the eggs, throw them on top of your sauteed vegetables. You could use anything really that you have in your refrigerator. Throw a little bit of cheese on there and then pop it in the oven until it's set, and that's all there is to it. So it's a really simple dish. It's almost like kind of like a quiche without a crust, basically. And I'm going to add a little bit of chopped garlic. So we want to cook this just until the garlic starts to brown a little bit. In the meantime, I'm going to just make sure we don't have any critters left in the squash flowers, because sometimes they hide out inside. And you can leave the stems and everything right on there. All right. We're going to add our eggs, a little bit of salt and pepper. Got a little of my au poivre blend, a little bit of Mediterranean blend, which is just kind of like an herb de Provence.
I would imagine the spice blend sort of makes this dish. Talk me through what's in both of those.
All right, well, the Mediterranean blend is, like I said, it's like an herb de Provence, so there's thyme and savory and a little bit of lavender, basil, a little bit of oregano, so a nice little mix of spices. And then the au poivre is just a mixture of different peppers. So I have a little bit of crushed red pepper, a little coriander seed, some black pepper, white pepper, guinea pepper, so a lot of different flavors there. All right, now we're just going to push in the edges, just like you would an omelet. Make sure we have our potatoes evenly dispersed. I'm going to turn off the heat, and we're going to pop that in the oven with a little bit of cheese on top.
Frittata time. Let's see. Is it ready to go?
It is.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Nice, firm setup.
Pulling away from the edges a little bit?
Just a little bit around the edge, right? We'll put it over here, and I'll cut it into wedges, just like you would do a quiche. And if you wanted to, you could serve a little bit of red pepper sauce or tomato sauce with this. Just really whatever you want. It makes a perfect peasant's dish. All right. Who wants a taste?
That was Earth Eats founder and former host Annie Corrigan with Chef Daniel Orr of Farm Bloomington Restaurant. They shared a favorite garden-to-table recipe from the Earth Eats archive. You can find this recipe and so many others at eartheats.org. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And insurance agent Dan Williamson of Bill Rush Insurance, offering comprehensive auto, business, and home coverage in affiliation with Pekin Insurance. Beyond the expected. More at 812-336-6838. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent providing customized financial services for individuals, businesses, and disabled adults, including tax planning, bill paying, and estate services. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And now we turn to Ron Finley. You may have heard of him. He's known as the Gangster Gardener. He gave a TED Talk back in 2013.
We got to make this sexy. So I want us all to become evolutionary, renegades, gangsters, gangster gardeners. We got to flip the script on what a gangster is. If you ain't a gardener, you ain't gangster. Get gangster with your shovel, okay? And let that be your weapon of choice.
Ron Finley lives in South Central Los Angeles, where he grows food and flowers in his yard. He started growing food on the strip of public land between the sidewalk and the street outside his house. He was sharing the food with neighbors or anyone walking by, kind of a spontaneous community garden space, or what some might call guerrilla gardening. Finley was fined for using that space, and he fought it. He fought for the right to beautify and to grow food in those spaces throughout the city, in those strips of forgotten land like islands and medians and parkways. He fought and he won. Because of Ron Finley, it's now legal to grow food in those places, all over the city. Ron Finley visited the Honors College at Indiana University in 2018 as part of their Mini Worlds One Globe lecture series. He had a conversation on stage with Andrea Schuchelli, the dean of the Hutton Honors College. Here are some recorded excerpts from that talk.
You are an artist, a collector, a designer, and a gardener.
And a father.
How does the urge of planting and promoting community gardens reconcile your other aspects?
It all goes to everything. It's symbiotic. Everything goes together. The act of gardening is everything. You know, you have all these elements that you're dealing with, the land, the soil, taking care of things. It's not just a single thing, you know. It's like it's real simple. If we grow together, we grow together.
Well, what urged you to see the need for promoting community gardening, utilizing, you know, basically empty spots like the parkways? And use grassy spots.
Well, because it was a thing where throughout the city, not just in South LA, it was just this vacant piece of land, and in a lot of cities, there's no place for you to grow food collectively. There's, you know, you might have your front yard, you might have your backyard, but the parkway, which is the strip of grass, you know, right before you get to the street, that strip of grass, I'm like, damn, you can, you know, why have grass there? We're not cows. We can't eat no damn grass. You know, so I figured you have this place and there's no healthy food anywhere. So why not just put the healthy food right here in front of your house where you can share with other people? You know, and that's what I did. And I got a warrant for my arrest. You know, but it was crazy because, you know, they would have dressers and toilets and condoms and trash and I never got a warrant. You know, I never got like, hey, you know, but as soon as I beautified it, as soon as there was hummingbirds and butterflies and, you know, lizards, you know, that's when I got a warrant. So that spoke volumes to me, you know, that if somebody comes and try to put beauty in a place where there is none, they get a citation. But if they leave it ugly and, you know, with trash sprawling all over the place, it's okay.
I'm sure that there are many people. If I were going to ask my friends in Italy, they would never imagine that, of all places, California is a place where entire sections of the population have no access to fresh produce. It's something unimaginable, especially if you think about the Hollywood ideas that we get about California. Or if you go there as a tourist and you see all this. Would you tell us a little bit more how you see your movement grow and change your own community, South Central LA, and how it can affect the rest of the country and the world?
Well, first of all, we have to understand that poverty is by design, just like communities are by design. It's like they call them underserved areas. Okay, so why don't you put something over there where it's not underserved? And I actually posed that question to a bunch of mayors once at a mayor's conference. And, you know, why are underserved areas underserved? And they're like, oh, well, you know, it starts. I said, no, I don't need your song and dance. They're underserved because you don't serve them. It's that simple. In areas where you want something, you put it there. Easy. So it's the same thing when these communities of color, all of a sudden the complexion of that community changes, all of a sudden there's infrastructures. So what does that tell me? That you just didn't give a shit about this community. That's all. And that's throughout America. Because I've been to a lot of states, and if there's black, brown, or red communities there, it's the same thing. You know, people don't care until other people are there. So the question was, how have what I've done changed? It's changed people in a sense that they know they have the opportunity to change what's going on around them, not just deal with it and think that this is how it is and this is how it's gonna be because it's always been like this. You know, Nobody thought about putting food on these parkways because they were designed to have grass there. So we're all designers, we're all artists. Everybody in this room's an artist. So if it don't fit, you change it. So that's what I've done. And it's, I mean, I've been from, I was just in Sao Paulo. These guys put a gigantic garden in. They just literally took the space over in front of their apartment building and they put a garden in. They said, this is because of you. There's a kid that sent me pictures in from San Antonio where he had his parents make these boxes in front of their house on the parkway, and he calls it his community grocery store. And everybody from the community can come and partake in the food. Because it's almost like people have woken up and said, you know, you're right. I'm the person that's supposed to do this. Why am I waiting for somebody else to give me what I need? You know, because think about it, if we all got together and start not growing all your food, growing some of your food, and then you share it with your neighbors because they're growing something different. Just imagine what the system that you have taken yourself out of. And it's not just one system. It's a bunch of systems, all the way from the health system to your community, to conversation that you will have, to people looking after their communities instead of being like we are now where everybody's closed off from each other and this is mine and this whole greed mentality where we could share. And that's what I'm doing has opened up a lot of people's minds across the country to saying collectively we can make this better.
You said that the funny thing about sustainability is that one has to sustain. What is the relationship between food as sustenance and food as part of a sustainable project?
We need not just food, we need healthy, nutritious food. And a lot of times, we're not getting that. You know, in a lot of situations, bless you, a lot of people don't know what healthy foods looks like. I had some young girls that I invited to my garden Sunday, and their parents, you know, were living on the freeway, and a girl that I had just met, she's taking care of them. I said, you should come by and I'll show them the garden. And they had never seen a ladybug, you know, they had never eaten a fresh orange off the tree, you know, and they did this and it changed. I had them eating oxalis and nasturtiums and different kinds of spinach right out the ground, and they had never experienced this, and you could see from the pictures how they looked when they got there to how they looked when they left holding a sunflower plant to plant in the ground. So it's the thing with gardens to me, it's not just food. You know, to me it equals freedom. You know, freedom from in some senses, oppression, because we're depending on somebody to give us everything that we do, instead of depending on ourselves to do it. You gotta think that some kids in some situations, they've never had any healthy food. They don't know what it tastes like. They don't know the difference between this food-ish shit to real food. Most people have not seen where their food is grown and the greatness of Mother Nature and Earth and how you take this little teeny seed and all of a sudden you have a tree that bears fruit. I mean, you can't call this nothing else but magic. I mean, look, you know, when you think about it, here you have something that destroys itself in the ground to give you food. And I think that's a process that we need to see, because most people do not know a plant in its natural form. They only know what came from that plant. You know, like I had some kids from Harvard University come by, and I'm like, okay, what's that? Spinach, parsley. And I'm like, no, you clown, it's a carrot, you know? But they didn't know a carrot top from its, you know, and we should know this. We should know what we're eating. We should know where it comes from. We should know what it looks like in the ground. We should know how it's grown instead of just going to the store and it's there. And with a child, when you show them that magic of putting a seed in the ground and pulling out this carrot, and it's like, I made this, you know? So it's an attachment there that they have that they don't get from anything else. You know, it's different from you just sitting a plate in front of them and it's there rather than them taking it out the ground and washing it, and then they put it on their own plate. So I think it affects your whole system. And it's like just eating the food. Who in here grows food, their own, some of their own food? Oh, that's a lot. You other people need to get with it and stop playing. And so you guys know how when you grow something, it just feels like it even tastes better. It might be your psyche, but it just tastes better than something you got from the store. If you present this to a child at an early age, I think that affects who they are. They're going to think about it totally different if you reinforce it. And it's not just that one time. This stuff, it has to be reinforced. The way we're going to change this and bring gardens into certain communities and certain people, we have to make it sexy. And how you make something sexy is you show people how they can make money from it. No, this is how you can make a living. This is how you can change your life. This is how you can change your community. This is how you can change people's health. And I've literally seen that happen. What they call in permaculture stacking functions. When you think of like worm bins, you put your scraps from your food, your rotten food into this worm bin, and all of a sudden the worms turn it into worm castings, just a fancy word for worm poop. And then also the liquid from this process, you catch it at the bottom of your worm bin. So now, and all of this is nutrient-rich products for your soil. And so now you have three things that you can sell from basically from your trash. You can sell the worms because they multiply like crazy and they can't fit into the bin. So you can sell your worms, you can sell the worm castings, and you can sell the worm tea that you've collected. So all of this has a value, and it's all that's free. And so these are the lessons that I try to instill in especially kids, you know, to keep them interested in it and to show them the magic and the science. I mean, we have to make it sexy like that. We have to make it interesting. And I think with that, it's gonna happen. We can create an evolution, you know, around the planet, because it's already started.
That was artist, activist, gardener, Ron Finley of the Ron Finley Project. Find more about his work on our website, eartheats.org. That's it for our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks also to the Earth Eats team, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Josephine McRobbie, Daniel Orr, Renee Reed, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Ron Finley and Dean Andre Schukeli. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. Production support comes from Bill Brown at Griffey Creek Studio, architectural design and consulting for residential, commercial, and community projects. Sustainable, energy positive, and resilient design for a rapidly changing world. Bill at griffeycreek.studio. Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And insurance agent Dan Williamson of Bill Resch Insurance, offering comprehensive auto, business, and home coverage in affiliation with Pekin Insurance. Beyond the expected. More at 812-336-6838.